Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Our interview today is sponsored by a hidden gem in Starkville, Mississippi, Alora Modern Wellness. Founded by healthcare veterans Rich and Lisa Lopez, Alora offers cutting-edge therapies like whole-body cryotherapy, infrared saunas, LED light treatments, and assisted stretching, all designed to relieve pain, reduce stress, and boost recovery. Whether you're an athlete, a busy professional, or simply seeking balance, Alora provides personalized care in a serene setting. Located at 821 C Highway 12 across from Kroger, it's your local destination for modern wellness. Discover more at aloramodernwellness.com. We're going to keep talking baseball all the way to opening day. Jacob Rudner, Baseball America, joins us now. And before we dive into Mississippi State and really even in the SEC, I want to talk about the story you broke yesterday with Penn State baseball. If I mispronounce the name, you can correct me. Jhené Sato, a Japanese prospect who you say is the best draft prospect in America for maybe this is the 2027 draft. Is this correct?
Yeah, 2027 draft. Not sure if I would go as far as best prospect in America, but okay. I certainly think that he's the best draft prospect to come over from Japan for the MLB draft. Rintaro Sasaki at Stanford did the same thing where he came over, he made himself eligible for the draft, and it didn't go so well in his first season with the Cardinal. And I think that that kind of put a bad taste in the people's mouth as far as this trend goes. You know, is this a viable path for players who are elite? And this guy, I think, really is. You know, he is a top half of the first round type prospect with high caliber stuff for sure.
So then it kind of begs the question, right? Because the guy who goes to Stanford is a constant player in college baseball, a team that year in, year out, you know, they've won national titles and been to Omaha many times. Why Penn State?
Great question. So, you know, I think a lot of people immediately go and they say, this is an NIL motivated decision and Penn State must have cobbled up together some sort of package.
Which would be, my thought would be, God, it's Mississippi State or LSU or Tennessee would come up with a much bigger package than Penn State, you would think.
You would think. And so I'm here to tell you that that's actually not how this went down. Penn State is home, and I won't even attempt because I'm going to butcher his name, but Penn State is home to the best Japanese collegiate wrestler in the world. He came from Japan. He went to State College. They have shown that they have the infrastructure and the track record to bring in elite Japanese talent, whether it's in baseball or beyond, and allow them to flourish at Penn State University. And I think that that was the main selling point for Sato. They were able to go to him and say, we have the pieces in place to make you successful, whether that's academically, whether that's athletically, from a living situation, and just assimilating into the cultural lifestyle that is, you know, American college campus living. And they're going to be able to make that happen for him. Was there NIL involved? Possibly, but it's much more difficult with international players. That's the first thing that needs to be recognized. And the second is, it really does sound like this kid made a decision based on what he thought was best for him from an institutional level, so how he was going to be able to take classes and learn and kind of move into American culture. And also from a baseball standpoint, he did think that there was, you know, really good pedigree with Mike Gambino and his staff.
That's a fascinating story to see. When I saw you had the story up that you knew where he was going to go, and I was like, okay, I'll wait till tomorrow and we'll see. And then when I saw Penn State, I was like, I was just shocked. And yeah, it's very interesting the way you lay it all out there. Take me around what we in football would call the power conferences outside of the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC. Who are the favorites in those leagues this year?
You know, let's start with the ACC because to me that's the main power broker next to the SEC. They're going to have the most bids to the NCAA tournament other than the SEC. And it's going to be the regulars again. You know, Florida State is positioned to be quite good again. They got Trey Beard at FAU who's going to probably front their rotation. Miles Bailey, their first baseman, has very early draft upside this year as a draft-eligible sophomore. Link Jarrett is now one of the top five paid coaches in the country. He got an extension this offseason when there was some rumors that perhaps Tennessee could try and weasel its way in there and steal him out of Florida State and bring him over to the SEC. So they kept him in the fold. They're going to be good yet again. I think Clemson has a chance to be super competitive. The team, though, that I view as the top sleeper out of the ACC, and I think that this will be reflected in our preseason rankings at Baseball America, is Georgia Tech. James Ramsey, in his first season, inherits what I believe to be an excellent and very deep roster. They have several draft prospects on that team, from Alex Hernandez, the infielder, to obviously Drew Burris, the outfielder, who's going to make an impact at the top of the first round this year if he can continue what he's been able to do for two seasons now in college. You want to move over to the Big 12. That's another league that I think is going to be extremely competitive again. I'm looking at TCU as the top team in that conference. I think that that roster is very mature. Tommy Lepore is one of my favorite aces in the country. Sawyer Strohsnyder is one of my favorite outfielders in the country. That's a good combo to have. And then Arizona State, if you want to name a sleeper, I think has a chance to be very good in the Big 12. The Big 10 is interesting because you're talking about the West Coast Big 10 and the regular Big 10. And I think that the power will belong to the West Coast yet again. Oregon and UCLA, for me, are the top two teams in the conference. UCLA, I have no problem saying it here because it's going to be the way that it is, will be the number one team on our poll to open the season this year. Went to Omaha with a roster that almost entirely returns. And so those are the teams, you know, across the power conferences that I have my eye on the most so far.
Mississippi State takes on UCLA in the Amici Bank College Series on March 1st, so possible Omaha preview when we get to that point. Let's look inside the SEC, and I've been doing these interviews. I want to hit up a couple of states' opponents this season, and let's start with the Vanderbilt Commodores, a team that will come to Starkville. That's the SEC home opener for the Bulldogs on March 20th. I'll be honest. I thought when NIL became a thing that Vanderbilt might take a step back because, you know, we all know for years they were kind of gaming the system, we'll put it that way. And now everybody can offer it, but it hasn't been that way. Vanderbilt's still maintained themselves as an elite program. What are the Commodores going to look like in 2025?
You know, I think that there's a little bit more uncertainty with Vanderbilt relative to what we've come to expect, especially on the mound. They lost a lot of firepower from last year's team, including two-thirds of their weekend rotation. Connor Fennell returns, and I have a lot of confidence that he's going to be somebody who kind of steps into this big role on the pitching side. I've had some conversations with coaches around the country who view him as one of these like very underrated, you know, maybe not talked about enough pitchers just because of the quality of the stuff and what he's capable of doing, plus the competitiveness kind of gives him that edge. At the plate, though, I do think that this is going to be a different Vanderbilt team in a way that makes them look better. I foresee them hitting for a little bit more power than they have in recent years. I know that that's been kind of a bugaboo for these Vanderbilt teams, and Tim Corbin has been very vocal that he wished that his most recent teams had the ability to put the ball over the wall a little bit more. And with guys like Brody Johnston, who is an outstanding power hitter, the question is just whether or not he's going to make enough contact now back for his sophomore year, plus a couple other guys who they got via the transfer portal who are a little bit more, you know, power forward in their offensive approach. I believe that we'll see that shine through, especially with some new hitting coaches in place for the season.
Super Bulldog weekend for Mississippi State, always a big deal. And this year, man, April 24th through the 26th, LSU, the defending national champions, two of the last three the Tigers have won, will head to Starkville with what could be, you know, I'm sure with your preseason poll, it's probably a preseason top five showdown, I would say. What are the Tigers going to look like this year as they try to make it 3 out of 4?
Well, first of all, I would say that that's an accurate early assumption that that's going to be a top five matchup for us in the preseason poll. LSU, to me, is kind of in an oddly similar position to how it entered last season, just maybe with a little bit more known depth than what it had going into the 2025 championship run. They are still kind of undecided on the mound. You bring back Cason Evans, who was the closer last year. I think there's a really good chance that we'll see him start on Fridays. Cooper Moore from Kansas was a really good transfer addition. I have a feeling we'll see him pitch over the weekends. However, beyond those two, it kind of gets murky as to who's going to occupy a rotation spot versus who's going to be in one of these critical fireman reliever, if not closer roles. And they have a lot of options. So it's not a situation where it's like, who's going to do it because who's capable? It's like you have so many capable guys, just which ones are going to slot into which roles on the mound. And at the plate, I think that they bring back a lot of talent in a way that kind of gives them some certainty that they've honestly been lacking, which sounds weird to say about LSU teams over the last couple years. Derek Curiel is an outstanding foundational piece. He's going to play center field instead of left for them this year. I think he has a chance to be the first college bat off the board if he continues to perform well. One of the better contact hitters. According to a couple people who I've had conversations with, he's 15 pounds heavier. He's learning to put the ball in the air a little bit more, so we could see kind of this power surge for a really promising young bat. And then they brought in some pieces from the transfer portal that have done well. Zach York from GCU is somebody who I'm really intrigued by. Good power hitter, but better contact hitter overall, despite kind of the size and what you might think if you looked at him at, you know, just with the eye test.
Mississippi State will finish the season at Texas A&M. Now, a year ago, Texas A&M was the undisputed number one team in the nation. It did not go according to plan for the Aggies. How do they bounce back this year?
Well, first of all, it starts with an absolutely fantastic support system outside of the coaching staff. I think that that is a program that is, extremely well resourced from its boosters, and it's put in a position to compete annually. So there really are not a lot of excuses in College Station as it comes to baseball. They have a great roster that was largely constructed through the transfer portal. I could go through their entire portal class and say something that I like about some of those guys. Chris Hakopian from Maryland is the headliner. He'll play short or third base. Great arm. Gavin Grahovic, who was hurt all of last year due to a shoulder injury, is back and healthy. Caden Sorrell, the center fielder, was out for the majority of last year due to a lingering hamstring injury. He is back and healthy. The question for me is whether or not Texas A&M will be able to pitch its way to the success that it wants to have this season. They have the pieces and the stuff. The question is, are they going to have the health and the success that comes with those things in order to be able to have what has to be probably a season in which you either host or get real close to that hosting line and then make an impressive, you know, appearance in the NCAA tournament in order to keep this coaching staff intact.
Let's talk about a couple of state's players in particular. You don't see a lot of 6'5" catchers out there, but Mississippi State has one on the roster and Kevin Mawuski, the transfer from Seton Hall, a lot of power in his bat. Is he going to be State's day one catcher? What's the ceiling on him as a player?
I certainly think he has a chance to be. And if you want to talk about ceiling, you kind of put it perfectly. That's a rare bucket. There aren't a lot of backstops who fall into this really tall, really strong, very powerful model. It's just not a common breed at the position. And I think that that's going to allow him to stand out quite quickly. You know, one thing that is important, there's two different types of conversations. We can talk about him as a pro prospect. And I think that there are a lot of things that come with that. Will he be able to stick at the position? Is he going to hit enough to get to his power against pro pitching? And then there's the what kind of damage can this guy do in the college ranks conversation, which is where I try my best to live in the preseason.
Yeah.
And I think that he's going to be really good just because it is easier for players like him to get to the power in game. He isn't facing as the kind of advanced pitching that he might see in the pros. And I do think that he's a serviceable enough backstop that he's going to stick at the position in college and be able to do a really good job back there. So I am excited about him. I do think that he's going to be kind of one of the more, you know, preeminent college power hitting catchers. And again, I think that he'll do fine enough at the position in order to not cost State runs there.
And then a guy that State brings back from a season ago is Garrick Fry, who, you know, had some trouble finding a position, but his bat is unquestionable. Where does he fit into this lineup for the Bulldogs?
You know, I think that kind of remains to be seen, and I'll be curious to track exactly where things line up in the preseason. There is a lot of talent on this roster, and if I could just give one broad takeaway, I know you didn't ask for this, but
go ahead.
If I could give one broad takeaway about the Mississippi State roster, it's that they have a ton of options at every position. There are a number of different combinations that can be put together in terms of defensive alignment in order to maximize the amount of plus bats that get into that lineup. And so I think that he's one of the kinds of guys who probably fall into the category of, we're not 100% sure where he's going to fit in defensively. I think that there are some, you know, inklings of what could be the end destination there. But the reality is that Coach O'Connor is going to do what he needs to do to get as many quality bats on the field as he can. And I don't know that the defensive alignment is going to come at the cost of that. So to answer your question kind of indirectly, I'm not 100% sure yet where he's going to line up. I'm just confident that they're going to do what they can in order to get his bat into play.
Baseball America put out its top 40 rising 2027 draft prospects, and Duke Stone was on there from Mississippi State. That's a guy who had a big summer this offseason. I look at him, guys like him, Charlie Foster, even to a certain extent, Ryan McPherson and Ben Davis, who had a bigger role last year. Mississippi State's got a lot of high-ceiling pitchers, it feels like. Do you feel confident those guys will turn, you know, potential into production?
I do, and I'm glad you brought up Duke Stone in particular. The stuff is so good. And that was one of the things that we fell in love with kind of when we were doing the scout at Baseball America and putting together these rankings and lists. We were looking at the raw stuff, and he's one of the guys that just really stands out for what he can do to a baseball. He's able to manipulate it in so many different ways. Plus, he's athletic, and he moves really well on the mound, and those things get us excited. And I think that that's kind of a theme that exists throughout this Mississippi State pitching staff. It's a deep group. I think it's going to be able to have that combination that you really need at the top end of college baseball between premium stuff and getting results out of these guys. Because as you are familiar, and you and I have talked about it before, there are so many examples of guys, especially in the SEC, who trot out there with premium stuff on the mound, but don't necessarily translate it to the ERA or how it impacts winning for their college team. And I think that this is a Mississippi State team that will have the right blend. It's going to be able to pitch really well. It's also going to look good on the pro prospect side in terms of what does the stuff do, how does it move, and what are these guys capable of doing when they move on to the pro level. So it's an impressively deep pitching staff that checks a lot of boxes.
Should be an incredible season. I really can't wait for opening day. We're only, I guess, now 40 some, I don't know, it's like 50 some odd days away. And we are counting them down here in Starkville, as I know you are as well, Jacob. Hope to see you in Starkville sometime soon, my friend. And we'll talk some more baseball very soon. Jacob Rudner, Baseball America, man. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.